The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
There are probably some topics, Holly, that over the years we've had really in-depth conversations on, sometimes really easy to talk about, other times incredibly difficult.
Yes, absolutely. Because we're all in different ages and stages of life, different things are happening, and we can't live under a rock.
Yeah, no, very fair. And I think that sometimes we're looking for answers. We're not sure where to find answers. And hopefully today we'll be able to dive into a bit deeper into maybe a topic of divorce.
Maybe, most likely, but there's so much more to a story than just that moment. And there's so much more to our guest today, so I'm excited to ask some very serious questions. Hard-hitting journalism right here.
Oh, wow. I'm
Lorraine's like,
ready.
hold on. What did I sign up for? She is an author. She's a speaker. She's a teacher. Lorraine Regisford, how are you?
I'm good. Beautiful day. So I'm
Yes.
very thankful. Yes.
Don't be jealous, Johnny.
I'm 100% jealous. That's exactly where I'm at right now. A topic of divorce, and we'll dive into that because I mean, there's a lot of questions as to how we get to the point and what do we do during and after and all that. But I think the first question that we'd like to ask, which is our skill testing question, Lorraine, who are you and where did you come from?
Wow. Thank you. Well, first I want to say thank you so much for interviewing me on this very important topic. So, as you mentioned, I'm an author. I'm also an educator, and I worked in the field of social work for about 30 years. And a Christian since I was 18. So all of those things are me, and I experienced a separation and divorce in my life after a long-term marriage over 27 years.
Oh, wow.
That's a long time. And so we call that particular divorce the gray divorce. And does anyone know why it's called the gray divorce? Any idea?
Maybe because
It's
you're a little bit older, a little more
a,
mature.
yeah, a little bit gray. It
Yes, your wisdom
kind of teaches
strands.
wisdom, right? And that actually is the highest growing number of divorces right now at the gray divorce. And so I'm part of that. Gray divorce is determined by your years of marriage over 20 years of marriage. Yeah. So, as I mentioned earlier, being a Christian and author, this is actually my third book, and I've been writing for about 20 years altogether. And my first book was about home management, because kids were little and how to manage the home. And then my next one, Awakening to Reinvention, was about life lessons that I've learned through my life and how it's changed and affected, impacted me. And then this one is about separation and divorce and how we can successfully navigate through this time in our lives.
What's interesting is that a lot of the people that we've spoken to in the past is I was dealing with a bad marriage, we worked it out. With you, it's a book on divorce. And I wanted to ask this question right off the hop because I was saying to Holly, one of the things as radio people, anytime that there's a talk of divorce on the radio, a lot of times we'll hear from our listeners that we're glorifying divorce, that we're saying that, oh, you're for it then because you're talking about it. Is that what this book is about?
Oh, absolutely not. I'm a full supporter of marriage. My parents, as a matter of fact, just celebrated their 63rd wedding anniversary.
Aww.
And pretty amazing. But unfortunately, these things do happen, whether or not we want to acknowledge that or not. So either for yourself or someone you know will go through separation and divorce. And so it's just a reality of the time that we are living in. I remember many years ago, I think I may be dating myself by saying this, but that divorce was seen as this real taboo, and children were ostracized, and socially you were sort of an outcast if you were divorced. But it is pretty much commonplace. And even if you check the classroom, I mentioned I'm an educator, elementary through high school, you'll see that probably about 50% of the classroom and children are with single parent families, led by single parents. So this is just one of those realities that we are facing right now.
Let's kind of rewind just a little bit to talk a little bit about your testimony. You said you became a Christian at 18. Was faith always a part of your family and your lived experience?
Yes, absolutely. I became a Christian at 18. My mother was Christian beforehand, and I joined her on the journey. And yes, interestingly, and through my marriage, we were Christians going to church, attending, faithful, participating in ministry, in leadership, etc. So these things do happen to families who are invested in their faith as well too. So yeah, that can be very challenging as well.
Do you think it's more difficult having a faith and getting divorced because we're told marriage is a for life thing and you're supposed to marry one person and have that one special person for the rest of your life, and then all of a sudden you make that decision and it's like the church is like, well, you obviously aren't dedicated to your marriage.
It is a challenging, but as I mentioned, that this is just a reality of what is happening, and dependent upon why that choice or that decision is made in that marriage, I think we best to sort of explore that as well, because I certainly think that we have to look at, I talk about the three A's: adultery, abuse, alcohol, and those circumstances where, it's very, very difficult to be in a marriage. I think what we need to look at it more is what supports we can have for people who are going through that stage. And I think fortunately for me, I've been able to see both sides. I was married for quite a while, a long time, 27 years, and also separated slash divorced for some time. So you see the both sides of it. When you are married, you don't necessarily see the side where the ministry is talking about people who are like me, gray divorce, and what supports are available to them. You don't necessarily see it because you're in a marriage, right? But when you're on the other side, that's when you really start to look at what supports and great churches that have programs that really identify that sometimes you're not the cause of your divorce. It's not your choice. And so what happens now? How do we help those individuals? How do we help those who have exited their marriage because of the three A's: adultery, abuse, alcohol, and what do we do? I think that's probably the best way of looking at it, as opposed to you shouldn't do it, because that doesn't help the situation at all for that individual or for their family, their children, if they have children.
And some people say divorce is not an option. But then you look at the three A's and then you wonder, okay, well, then what happens in those situations and what's going to be the best for all parties involved?
Exactly. And that is that person's personal decision, and I believe that if that person decides that their faith will help them to continue, if those that happens to be the circumstance in their marriage, very difficult to have that live through that experience. But I also know people who have had that experience, got through it, as you mentioned in the beginning of the show, and have had very successful marriages after that, with the healing and forgiveness and reconciliation. And for some, the marriage is even better and stronger than it was before all of this happened. So it doesn't mean, because of those three areas, that absolutely you need to separate a divorce. It depends on, as I said, your relationship, and sometimes you're not the initiator. So what's next?
What about seeking help through pastoral help or a psychologist or a marriage therapist? Was that something that you and your ex-husband were doing?
Seeking help is really essential to that, which, typically we'll go to our closer, I call them our internal support systems, our friends and our family. And having someone external to your relationship, just because of the chance of the lack of bias, and you can actually be free and open about some of the circumstances that you may not want to discuss with the people in your life, your family and your friends. It's really important to go through that and fully explore that. But that's not always an option. For a very successful counseling session, both persons have to be willing and available to fully participate in this. And they also both have to be wanting the marriage to work and wanting to heal the marriage. It's very difficult, as I said, to roll with one oar. It's not impossible, but the best counseling or therapeutic situation is when both parties see that something is terribly wrong and are invested in ensuring that, they can rebuild their relationship.
there's still a lot of stigma around divorce, especially I would say in the faith community. People saying things like, you're not trying hard enough, or I don't know, there's just like a myriad of just toxic messages. If someone is in a situation where divorce is now an option, it is on the table, what would your advice be to help them navigate that in a way that's, I want to say, church trauma free?
Well,
as best as possible.
Yes. You know what? Your divorce, your separation, the intimate details of your relationship, you may not be sharing, or may not be willing to share, just because of your privacy and so on. So everyone's case or life is different as to why they are or they made that decision to pursue separation and divorce. And once again, I'm just saying I'm not advocating for that. And, you know, are the best situation is for both to be in a healthy, good relationship together, because that's good for you. It's good for your children. It's good for children. It's what we talk about. This is what we believe. So that's the best scenario. But you do, and you know, have situations where, and I'm actually thinking of a story that happened to me. And I it was just after my separation, and I went to church for a prayer meeting. And a person came over to me and they asked me where my spouse was. And I said, you know, this is a situation. And they asked me if I was also attending another prayer meeting on another day as well. And I said, oh, no, I'm going to this one. And this was before the prayer meeting. And the person said to me, well, you know, if you had gone to the other meeting, perhaps you could have saved your marriage. And yes, and that was just before the prayer meeting. I don't think I heard or did anything. I was kind of in shock. So there is that, you know, that attitude sometimes, and that's rare. That's not everyone. Most people in church are very sensitive to it, because as I mentioned, either you or someone you know has gone through it. So you're not going to just speak unkindly or without sensitivity to someone. So most people are very sensitive about it. But you do have those occasions where someone will say something and you think, pardon me, right? But I think in those circumstances, you've just got to know what your story is. What is, you know, what is guiding your decision or the decision that's been made, and really go from there, because you can't prevent individuals from being unkind or insensitive when this is a decision that you have made or your family has made. Mm-hmm.
My parents had a great divorce as well. And you can kind of see, like, looking back on it, you could kind of see that you knew that it was probably going to happen at some point, just because they were on two very different paths. Looking at your marriage of 27 years, was that something mm-hmm. that you at some point saw happening, or did you think and hope that you could make it work?
I think there was a combination of both. Of course, being a Christian, wanting it to work for the myriad of reasons that I mentioned before, that, I mean, it's your children. We have three children. They were adult children at the time. Even in terms of legacy going forward for them to have a healthy, long-lasting relationships, for commitment to the Lord and et cetera, you know, definitely that was something that I wanted for myself, for my family as well, too. But as I mentioned, sometimes these things happen. But going back to your point about sort of seeing when things are kind of not going well, they estimate about 2 to 3 years before this actually happens, there is that lack of clarity. Things are not happening the way they should or they could, or there's questions about things that are happening, behaviors, but you're just still not being able to put all the pieces together until all the pieces are together. Mm-hmm. And so you do see that. The top reasons for a gray divorce, one, as you mentioned, they're sort of separate lives, and sometimes the children are there as a bit of a sort of a protection, and then they go perhaps to a post-secondary away or move out, and then you're left with the two of you. Adultery is another reason why that can happen in terms of the gray divorce. Finances. Typically, gray divorce happens in your middle age, ages, your late 40s, your 50s onwards. And usually by then, the couple is financially sound. And interestingly enough, that financial soundness can also be a positive for someone who wants to leave, because now they can be financially independent and not worry as much about their finances if they've got a significant amount of assets and a home that's paid off, etc. So there's a variety of reasons why the gray divorce happens, but statistically they say that if you're married more than 40 years, it will last.
All right. So. You're almost there, Johnny.
Most likely it will last.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. There's hope.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Goodness. Well, I'm sure when you were younger, this was not necessarily the topic that you were hoping that God would use you to have to, to talk about. What was the dream for you?
In terms of in my marriage?
Yeah, within the marriage and just life in general. Yeah.
Well, you know, this is really interesting because, as I mentioned, the gray divorce. Now, that's not the only divorce. That's the highest number, but certainly other divorces are happening as well, too. Right. Yeah. So I just put that in there. But for me, I was going into my middle age. We had assets, and I was really thinking of my retirement. And we had planned that I would travel and teach. He's also a teacher, and you know how you can teach abroad, and then he would come with me and kind of use it as our passport to see the world. And so certainly going into the next leg, which is, you know, a little bit more of independence, being able to travel, more freedom, financial freedom, and then turning around to look after our parents, because that's the next stage, right?
Yeah.
Of life. But enjoying that, I say it's about 10 or 15 years between when the children leave and they're fully secure in their own life. And then you have to start taking care of your parents. It's about 10 years or 15. So I was looking forward to that, you know, that block of time to really live and enjoy, you know, what God had blessed us with up until that point. Yes. Yeah. So that was the dream. But I talk about in next chapter about letting go of the dream and creating new ones. And that's definitely a huge area, not just for people experiencing gray divorce, but just divorce in general. Because as you mentioned, nobody goes into marriage, you know, walking down the aisle thinking, one day I'm going to divorce you.
Yeah. Married for looks, going to divorce for money.
Right? This is not going to last.
I don't know where that came from.
Right? All these making up things now.
We don't really, you know, we don't really think like that, that we're planning for our, you know, relationship to end.
Yeah.
And so at any stage of the separation and divorce cycle, letting go of whatever dreams that you had or plans that you had, and then looking towards the new ones, it's really important, because looking towards a new one is about hope, you know, and planning. And I, in the book, I talk about, you know, the impact and effect on your health and your life. So not just the impact of divorce, but how does it affect you physically, mentally, emotionally? And having hope and dreaming and planning, it actually builds your cognitive reserve in your mind, and it strengthens you. And having that, we remember the scripture says, you know, hope deferred makes the heart sick. And feeling hopeless, or as your show says, why me? Why is this happening to me? Certainly can, if entertained too long or lived in that space too long, can lead to depression and poor health. So we look at it in terms of, in the book, mapping out, you know, how do you go about setting new goals and plans? How, you know, what is a SMART goal? What is your new life mission statement? How do you want to live? What are your values and your boundaries? Because those will change as you move forward in your new life. These values and boundaries, they adjust through ages and stages of your life, and really doing self-assessment of yourself. What do you see for yourself? Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And there's actually spaces in the book where you can actually write and work through these areas for your life. So it's a book, but it also it's a bit of a workbook and a guide to help you start focusing on what's next, what's in your next chapter.
It is interesting that you mentioned that, though, because I was going to ask, what do you want people to get from this? I mean, it's one thing to read about somebody going through this. Is it a step by step into, okay, so we've now called it quits. Now what? The next day I'm alone in a room looking at the ceiling and I don't have my, spouse beside me. Is it a step by step guide? Is it like when people are reading it, what are your hopes that they get from it?
I'm a hope. My hope is that hope. My hope is that this will be hopeful, that this is an encouraging book that looks at what is next for you in the different elements of your life. And so I focus on self-care. Now, what things can you do to take care of yourself? Mental health is huge. And divorce, although it's commonplace, can be very traumatic. And taking care of yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, and I talk about things you can practically do in those areas. I just mentioned about values and boundaries. We have a values exercise where you can look at what your values are and your core values, because those change and certainly will change through this stage of your life as well too. What your values were when you were 20 is different than when you're 30, 40, 50, etc., and exploring those. And also looking at healthy boundaries, because sometimes when you're in a bad relationship, negative, dysfunctional, it's leading to, and you're in separation, divorce, you can start to erect boundaries that become walls, right? And you want to look at these to make sure that you're not building this wall around you in a very unhealthy way. And we also want to look at boundaries from the perspective of when you are in a relationship that's not healthy and dysfunctional, you start to create these ways of adapting to that that may not be healthy. So exploring those things and making sure that you're not carrying those areas forward into your next chapter of your life.
I want to dive into your why me moment. You kind of alluded to people experiencing why me moments going through divorce. For you, was your why me moment attached to the divorce, or do you have another one?
You know what? I think definitely there's always why me moments, right? But interesting about why me moments, they're never like for positive things. Like, why did you give me $10 million? Why me? Why me? It's always attached to like this horrible thing, and so and that's a why me. Is a very natural thing, a natural position to have, because it's there's nothing wrong with grieving and being in a space where you're just not happy. So it's not about having to be happy all the time. But I did have a why me moment, particularly at the end of my marriage, where I had those plans and those dreams ahead. So why is this happening to me? I had all these plans, right? I'm a good person. I could tell you numerically and alphabetically, the list, So why is this happening to me? And so I think it's a very natural state. And I did go through it. And I say go through it because it wasn't just like a moment where I said, why me? And oh, it's okay now. It's a process when you're going through your why me, because it's a part of grieving and a part of accepting and a part of, understanding and evaluating, assessing what actually happened in your life. But as I said, the most important part is not staying in that why me for too long, because that's when you get stuck. And when you get stuck, it can lead to like very unhealthy thinking and behavior. And of course, blaming and just not being able to move forward at all. It's almost like a quicksand if you stay in it too long. But definitely taking the time to grieve, to acknowledge what's happened to you, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Kubler-Ross, which is one of the areas of social work, we talk about the stages of grieving, right? Five stages, and now they're saying that divorce goes through those stages. It's a death of a relationship, and so grieving and going through that, and then but keeping in mind that there is hope for your next chapter.
I'm glad you said that about the grief, because I was going to ask, how did you grieve that process of the loss and the death of the relationship? Was there a moment where you just thought, okay, it's time to move on?
I ate a lot of candy and and yeah, and cake. and
Yes, okay.
the night scream. But yeah, I definitely grieve that. And I think everyone experiences grief differently. For me, it was my alone time where I would spend time. I would love to go for drives and I would take long drives, just thinking and kind of working through that for myself and what that meant to me and how my life was going to change as a result of this. So I spent some time in that. I think the moment that I decided that, okay, that's enough, sort of that David moment when David says, okay, I'm just gonna put on my clothes and shave and move forward, was a moment when I realized that if I stayed in that much longer, it could become very debilitating for me. It wasn't like a, in terms of an aha moment. And in terms of, today I said, oh, this is it. But it was a sort of an evolution of, I need to move from that. And how can I turn this why me into this is my life circumstance, but how can I help myself and help someone else? The facts are anyone that's gone, anyone who's very successful in life, you look at any of the people that we might, hear about a researcher or whatever, they all have a story of that why me moment, this thing, this event that happened in their life, that defining moment where they could have gone, it could have gone really bad and no one would have blamed them for it. But they chose to go the opposite way and say, well, how can I take this pain and make it into my gain? And certainly that builds resiliency, character, strength. And so I'm so thankful that I didn't go the other way because that certainly could have happened.
I do appreciate your transparency on your life and your relationships. One thing that I find, and I don't know, maybe it's something that you touch on in Next Chapter, Life After Divorce, is the relationship with your ex. Because it's funny because, and I'm not funny, haha, funny, ironic, if you will. I see my parents, and my parents can be in the same room, but it's not the same. Friends of mine just ended up separating a few years ago. And they're almost like best friends. It's almost like they're way better best friends than they were husband and wife. Is that something that you touch on, or is it something that you'd be willing to touch on with regards to the relationship after the marriage?
You know what? It's really dependent on the two individuals, the nature of the end of the relationship, and how they're able to communicate. I certainly think that in the long run, over a span of time, that even in those relationships where there's no communication there, maybe some hostility or anger or frustration, that certainly with time that those relationships can be healed so they can have those conversations together. I'm actually thinking of a family right now where they went through a very difficult time, separation, divorce, went through a very difficult time also of not talking and anger, and then almost became best friends after that. But it depends on the healing, the individuals involved in it, and also, I think in terms of your intention and hope for the other person, in terms of now this has ended, what do I hope for that person? And if you have positive hope for that person, it's easier to want the best for them, even though you could not be together or are not together.
I'm curious as to why you wanted to put yourself out there when divorce is still in a lot of circles very taboo. Clearly, a lot of people are dealing with it, and I know you've done your research. Why put yourself out there? It would be so much easier just to hide and just be like, I survived. All right.
I think that because it's so prevalent out there, it's really important to talk about it in a very healthy way. Because once you talk about it, then you can start to help. If you have it as a secret or, something that's embarrassing or there's a lot of shame associated with it, then all of those persons who are experiencing that are sort of relegated to those feelings and living that life for the rest of their life. But if you approach it as, no, this is not what the individual wants or wanted, but it happened. And but what can we do to ensure that that person is able to live their best life afterwards? And talk about the very practical ways of doing that and the things that you should consider if you are going to separate and divorce. I've had individuals read my book and not to end their marriage, but to keep their marriage in terms of these are the things that I would have to consider. Maybe it's far easier to work on the relationship than to, you know, look at all of these things that I would have to consider separating from this individual. Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, me speaking about it, because it's real and this is part of my life. This is part of my story of my life. Certainly not how I saw it, but this is what it is. And I certainly can help someone through this stage of their life. It's really important. And also, I think too, as Christians, you know, Ecclesiastes talks about mourning and joy, and these are things that happen in life, and we can't hide from them or attach shame to them, because then we can't help the person.
Well, we've been talking about the next chapter. So Lorraine, for you, what is your next chapter?
Well, I'm actually engaged right now.
Oh,
so
wow.
That will be my next chapter, perhaps my next book, next chapter. But yeah, absolutely, there is. You know, there's a big section on dating again, which I use for myself.
There you go. And it worked. Yeah. It worked.
It worked. It worked. It worked.
Oh, yeah, congratulations. So, yeah. That's
Thank
amazing.
You so much. Thank
Isn't
you so
it
much.
Incredible how our God is a God of restoration?
Yes, he certainly is. He really is. And he's such a blessing.
Yes.
And so blessed. So,
and
thank
for
God.
Those of you who couldn't see, can we go skating on your ring later?
Yeah. Yeah.
I almost got blinded. Well done.
Thank you. Thank him.
Holly, hold the book up. I know you have it.
Oh, I do. I do. It's right here.
Hold it up.
I got
Next
this.
Chapter, Life After Divorce, mylifematters.ca. Lorraine, this is, I appreciate you taking some time today. And again, being very transparent and sharing your heart.
Well, thank you. It's just a wonderful opportunity to do that. I know that in your audience right now, there are probably women, men who are going through this right now. And maybe they're even a little embarrassed and ashamed and don't know what to do next. But Next Chapter is a very helpful guide to, you know, even if they don't read every chapter, but they can look through the table of contents and see what applies to them at this time, at this season in their life. Maybe they want to look at self-care. Maybe they want to look at, you know, their finances. Maybe they want to look at their values and boundaries. And just take it one step at a time. And I would say, and I've said in the book, you know, be kind to yourself. Mm. Be kind to yourself, because, you know, for yourself, this is a huge event in your life, and you know, try to forgive yourself and try to be kind. Yeah,
we can be our own worst enemies, can't we?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. I think this will be very helpful for people who are either navigating it themselves, or maybe they've got friends who are navigating it, and you're trying to figure out, how do I help them? How do I support them? They're grieving. I don't know what to do. I don't even know it's going to be helpful. It gives us also tools to use to be able to reach people and meet them where they're at.
Yeah, very practical tools.
The big word that I came out of this was transparency and being honest about what we're going through. And I think the second word that I got out of this, Holly, is the word support, whether it's support from friends or church or getting your own mental support.
Yes. I love that those were the things that stood out to you. For me, it was about not letting your boundaries become walls.
Hmm.
I never thought of it like that before, but often when we feel threatened or attacked, we build walls. We create a boundary for us to live in, and it's to protect us. But
no.
We need to have the healthy boundaries, not the walls.
I mean, even at the end where Lorraine was saying, be kind to yourself. How often are we so tough on ourselves with the things that we're going through, and we don't give ourselves grace, and we're not kind, and we're so angry at ourselves that what we internalize then, you know, is more external.
Exactly. And I'm so excited that she's now into her next chapter. And I mean, if you are wondering about dating, like that's another whole podcast, I would say. Like, how do you now re-enter into the dating world when there's technology? So definitely check out that book. She does talk about it as well.
Yeah, no, it's good. Thank you to everybody who has showed their support, continues to show your support, whether it's on the YouTube or on the socials. We are, an email. We are there, and we want you to be a part of what we're doing.
Absolutely. And don't forget, you can always check us out at faithstrongtoday.com.